In a world where people brag about being busy the way they used to brag about vacation photos, genuine rest has become almost countercultural. But maybe it's the secret weapon we all keep overlooking. Guys, welcome back to the Innovation Room. I'm Tori here with my co-host Rhiannon. This is the first part of a two-part episode, and we're going to be talking all about rest and how to rest well. This is, I think, probably one of my all-time favorite episodes that we've recorded. We've got a really special guest coming up. So be sure to stick around, watch this episode. Stay tuned for part two that will come out on December 18th. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Innovation Room podcast. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving holiday. I'm really excited to introduce our guest for today's show, but before I do that, don't forget to like and subscribe to the Innovation Room podcast here on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, I'm excited to introduce Scott Kutcher to y'all today. Scott is the founder of Core Visual Group, a business development agency dedicated to the one industry that shapes all the others, sign and graphics. He's a natural creator and storyteller, and he's always kind of broken the mold, an anomaly driven by a God-given instinct to craft meaningful experiences and the narratives that elevate them. His 30-plus year journey has taken him from a hands-on sign maker to business development strategist to brand representation. Each role has been shaped by the unique needs of the people and the organizations that he served. Along the way, he proved a simple truth over and over again: the better the experience, the greater the growth. That belief became Servology, which is Scott's signature methodology now used to guide innovative startups and Fortune 500 brands alike. As a consultant and coach, Scott helps companies amplify their impact, deepen customer loyalty, and unleash the power of experience-driven growth. Scott, welcome to the Innovation Room.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
It is. There's a lot there, but it's all good stuff. We love to hear it.
Well, you know, after 30 plus years, it's hard to summarize it, you know, and so I had someone help me do it because I hate writing those things, but I think they did a pretty good job.
Absolutely. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Well, thank you for having me. This is it's a lot of fun, and, you know, I get to know some of the other people, John and them, so now I get to know you all a little bit, so that's great.
Love it. All right, y'all. So we are talking about, what does it mean to rest well in a world, particularly in our American culture, when we're just like all about the grind, right? And I think the U.S. has always had a really interesting relationship with rest. And we do recognize rest as at least like kind of sort of somewhat important, right? But I think we're just overall not very good at it. And this focus on the grind is part of what has made America the most innovative and economically dominant country of the last two centuries, right? But the hustle culture has come at a cost for Americans, right? The cost of rest and renewal. According to a 2023 Deloitte survey, 84% of professionals said that they wanted to prioritize their well-being, but less than half of those surveyed actually did something as simple as taking micro breaks throughout the day. And there are people who say that the reason they don't take breaks is because it maybe feels unproductive. But there's another study from Slack that shows that workers who do take regular breaks have 13% higher productivity and 62% higher work-life balance. Okay, so let's let the numbers talk here. This is just one of the small pieces of the stress versus rest contest in our culture. But it does kind of highlight the dichotomy that a lot of people feel, right? Where they know they need to rest, but they don't feel like they can. So Scott has some really great insights, and I'm excited to dig into this with you, Scott.
I hope so.
I think you will. We trust. So let's just start here. How do you think we kind of got to this place in our culture, right? Where we treat exhaustion like, oh, I only got 5 hours of sleep last night, or right? We treat it like a badge of honor. How do we get here?
You know, I think it really starts when I think about it. I go back to when I was a young man. You know, I'm 54 now. I've been in this industry 30 plus years. I've seen a lot, experienced a lot, still learning every day, right? Which is what makes life so amazing, is you're always able to learn and evolve. But when I look back and I think about it, I remember one night I was just out with some friends. And, you know, clubbing, whatever, just hanging out. And you know, I remember meeting a new guy that was a friend of a friend. I want to say his name was Rick. It's been a long time. But anyways, he made the statement, yeah, you know, I just got off my shift. I'm up to 80 hours this week. Like, it's a badge of honor that he worked 80 hours and then is still out having a drink, right? And
go to bed.
It's funny because I know, right?
Well,
you're like,
dang.
Okay.
Yeah.
But here I am remembering this, you know, memory. And I went up to him. I said, I just finished 85. I have my own sign shop. So at the end of the day, it's like this, I'm going to one up you. I need 4 hours. That's all I need. You know, I got you, right? I'm tougher than you, whatever. But if you really want to dissect it and peel that onion and really go to the core, I think it's the educational system. So if you take a look at our educational system and how it was defined by the Rockefellers. So the Rockefellers petitioned John Dewey and said, hey, we need worker bees. We're industrializing the United States. We need the original AI, right? So to speak. So we need those people that are going to, you know, we need reading, writing, arithmetic. We need to program them. And when you look at the way the school system's set up in the public school system, bell rings, you go to the next thing. Bell rings, you go to the next thing, right? It's all systematic. It's all, and if you don't fit in that, they're going to make you fit in that somehow, or you're the problem child. And I know it's hard to believe that I was one of those problem children, but I was totally one of those problem children. They didn't even know what ADD was back then. So we're like, what is this kid doing? He's all over. So I think it starts with the educational system because we don't take a look at what do they need as a base foundation, reading, writing, arithmetic, history, right? That basic civics to be a good citizen. We don't take a look at that and then go, okay, from that, what do we build off of? Instead, we say how we need them to perform. So we have a performance-based society right off the bat. On top of that, the ones that raise to the top that are the teacher's pets that are very intelligent, like my wife, super, super smart woman, raised to the top, those people tend to be put up on a pedestal while the rest of us are just, okay, we'll get him proficient enough to get by, right, type of thing. Not looking at my strengths, not looking at what my capabilities are or yours or anyone else's. So there was this mentality that had been happening where we were programmed, and it's done in such a way that our identity's tied to it because it's all performance-based and it's all out of competition. I remember Tony Chin, brilliant young man, only Chinese person in a little 20,000, you know, town up in Pickwell, Ohio, in the middle of nowhere. And he was brilliant. And he was always to himself, but he always scored super high. And he's gone on to have this massive career because he's able to take his intelligence and match it up with what his calling was. He was one of the lucky ones. I find maybe 10% is the case. So you have this competition constantly, but he was always in the books. He was always, I got to be better. I got to be better. I got to be better. So he thrived inside that competition. That's part of their culture, where the rest of us, we struggle with it, right? Here I am in geometry drawing on the back because my thing was art and photography. So here I am drawing a portrait of the teacher because I got halfway through and said, I don't know, you know? So.
Well, I think you've already given us an insight to think about because honestly, I never thought about it in that way. But when you know, I have young kids in school. We just talked, I'm kind of doing some homeschool, some are at school, and their minds, especially in elementary school, and how they're listening and absorbing everything and being molded from such a young age into what the expectations are and to follow that set of expectations. And when you do take a step back and look at that, that's so true. And it is so true that, like, that is how it's ingrained in us to follow the grind from day one. I mean, I look at it and like, why does kindergarten have homework? Like, why are they sending papers home?
Come on.
Kids have been in school for 8 hours a day. Like, and I'm all about parenting to help teachers and things along those lines. It's not like I just throw them to you and say, do your job and move on. Like, I'm all about, like, hey, I need to help them study and things along those lines. But why do they have homework? Like, after all this time in school? The other thing I've heard that may go along with this a little bit is just like boys. And you were touching a little bit on ADHD and how much there was such a rise in ADHD in boys, especially like 10, 20 years ago, it was everybody. It was like almost every boy, but when they take a look at it, a lot of boys in at that age are not meant to sit at a desk
for
8 hours a day. No. That is not how their brains work. That is not what they need. That is not how they were designed. And so, yes, you are correct in the fact that they were taken. Here's how they were made. Here's how their brains were. And they were sat in this desk and said, and basically said, do it. And in mold to everybody else's standard, or you're the weird one, or you're the trouble kid.
Well, and I think the interesting thing is that, right, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, the desperate need for people to work in the skilled trades, right? And those are people like, do you need to know the great poets of the world in order to be a great plumber? No, you do not. No. And it's, do I find that interesting information? Sure. But where we're needing jobs and you're talking about civic responsibility, right? Where we need support for our, just like our infrastructure, is actually not in people who are killing it in the classroom, but people who can work with their hands, right?
Yeah. And problem solvers.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So that's the other thing that's scary. Part of this thriving tech, it's so funny. We're in this time of thrive, right? And you gotta grind it out. You gotta keep going. You got grit. Come on, boy and you girl, come on. You guys can do it. And you look at it and you go, where did that really come from? And it started with the educational system because they need worker bees. But where it started to get magnified was there was work-life balance back then.
Totally. 100%. Yes.
Yep. The whistle went off, they went home and they were home. They may have worked 10 hours. They may have worked 12 hours, but there's work-life balance. And then Ford comes along and gives us the 8-hour work week or 8-hour work day, mm-hmm. right? So a lot of great things happened inside all of the muck. You know, everything starts messy and then you figure out from the chaos where to go, right? So it's really interesting because, you know, I was told by teachers I'd never amount to anything. Because I didn't fit that mold. I didn't fit that mold, right? So it's crazy because when we took our daughter, who's literally gifted, 140 plus IQ, just super gifted, also an artist, so she thinks with both sides of her brain, just unbelievable young lady. And I know I'm being a little biased, but some people have met her in the industry. She interned for me for a little bit. And just people were like, wow, she's amazing. And I said, yeah, I know. She takes after her mom. But you know, she was not doing well at one point because she started asking this question, how do I apply it? So you get all this knowledge and they want to know, how does this get applied?
Right.
Like you talked about the poets.
Right.
How you apply it? If you're a guy, well, that's how you pick up chicks. That's how you pick up, right? Plain and simple. I know poetry. Let me sing some to you. And that's how you pick up the girls. But if outside of that, it does nothing to enhance your ability to provide and protect and to have the type of life that God designed you to have. Whether your belief system is that or not, you know, you were created to have a certain type of life because you get certain gifts and certain abilities and certain experiences. Well, we're now in this culture where there is no, we got to go, go, go. And a lot of it's technology, and I'm sure we're going to get into that, but we can go into that later. But there's a lot of things that go into that one thing, you know, and I think what we have to do is step back and go, how is it really affecting not only us, but our kids, the next generation, you know, we're not asking hard enough questions. And the business community isn't leading by example. Instead, they're just utilizing people to increase productivity. And they're not realizing that that productivity comes at a major cost. So now we have all these turnover rates and all these other issues, right? People burning out at a rapid rate.
Well, you know what's interesting to me about all this is, and we've talked about this in the podcast as well, is the generational just how people work and what they do and what the, how much they give into their job. And I was actually just talking to my boss about this morning in regards to our generation or generations and then current generations that are entering the workforce. I'm talking like early 20s now. And the fact that the job hopping is constant, there's no like real loyalty to a position or a job or like ownership of that position. So like, where's that shift come in? When you're talking about this core issue of, okay, you have these deep down grind, you know, and it's innate in us, but where was the disconnect here? Like what happened into these intergenerational, because we are seeing a lot less of that. They want that everything handed to them. They want the ease in order, and they don't earn the extra raise or the money. They just go to a different job because they know they're going to get a higher pay if they go somewhere else. So why would they stay here? There's no long-term longevity anywhere. So it's interesting because you have the kind of both sides of the coin here.
Yeah. Well, they feel like they're entitled, I believe, because we have put them in the grind of school. So like you said, they'll go to school 8 hours. And then I watch my daughter do 4 or 5 hours worth of homework. And she stopped doing it. She's checked out. We pull her out of public school, homeschool her for just, we don't even homeschool her. We de-schooled her. We literally go, here's what you need to do according to state regulations. You go and tell us what you want to learn about to meet these regulations. She designed her own curriculum.
Yeah. Wow.
She goes off to school full ride. She's got a 4.0 last semester. She's on track for 3.85. She's part of Theta, Kappa, whatever.
Phi Beta National Kappa?
Honor Society.
Yeah. Okay.
She's part of all that. It's like, yeah, I told you, they're the smart ones. I'm just, I'm the bumbling idiot.
Well, it's amazing. My daughter that is homeschooled at 9, she can finish her work in 2-3 hours. And that's a full curriculum of, the 4 subjects and everything along those lines. So you're onto something.
What are we really teaching them? Right?
Yeah.
You got to ask yourself, what are we really teaching them? We got to stop and go. We have to start going back to a very fundamental thing that I've used for years that I call Servology. And that is, it's made up of 3 core questions and then a final question. And that is, who does this serve?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's serving the companies. It's not serving the child.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they need served? Well, they need served because they are designed by God to become a productive member of society, but they have a life and they have ambitions and they have dreams that were put on their heart to go out and manifest, right? Why me? Why am I the one to serve them? Well, the public school system isn't anymore unless they change. There's a great school, if you guys want to look it up outside of this, called Alpha. It's down in Texas. It's a woman, Berkeley educated, highly educated woman said, this is stupid. And so she created a school that uses AI, right?
Mm-hmm. I've heard of
this. And here's the thing about AI. Everyone gets scared. And I'm like, don't be scared of AI because I've done a deep dive and I continue to deep dive on it. It's just a tool. What you point it to is what you will get back. So if you want to have bias, you can point it towards certain things and it'll give you biased data. If you want truth, you can point it towards all the data and it'll just feed back data that you can derive your own truth from. Well, she pointed it towards the fundamentals of education. Okay, got rid of all indoctrination, all viewpoints, just what are the fundamentals? Reading, writing, arithmetic. And then she said, now you can have passion projects. And instead of teachers, they have coaches, mentors that mentor the kids. They got kids starting companies that are worth millions when they graduate high school.
Which is wild.
They're tested in the top 10%.
Look at some of the most successful people in the world that don't have college educations or don't have those degrees, that background. It is crazy. And honestly, a high population of those people are less educated, which is crazy to me. So let's go to the next question with this. What are some of those early warning signs that somebody that is in that grind mode, actually it's lowering their performance and not raising it?
So I think what ends up happening when you're in that grind mode and you're lowering the expectations is, it all ties back to technology. So when you walk by somebody and they're staring at a screen and they've got 20 things up and they're just, you can see that they're just trying to get one thing done, but they keep looking over here. And that's number one. That throws a red flag up because that tells me they lack focus. They don't know what impacts the person that they're supposed to be serving the most, right? So let's say a sign company details out, look, we serve the medical industry, entertainment industry. This is our primary, and everything else is just overflow, right? You always have that primary group that you serve, and then everything else flows out of that. And there is an overflow that serves other people also. So let's just say that's their main targets and they're serving those areas. Well, they know those kind of companies, they have certain hours. Well, you have to mimic those hours to serve them, right? You also have certain tasks that you know will impact them the most. Well, if they're working on tasks that aren't impacting them, it's because they don't know what impacts them the most, and they have no idea what they need to be doing in order to create the impact the brand needs to have to serve that end user, right? So lack of direction is part of the problem too inside organizations, is they lack, vision and articulate in such a way that shows the impact that the brand's going to have, what it has today, what it wants to have tomorrow, and how they plan on getting there and the role you play within it. So part of burnout is you're always reacting. Always reacting to everybody else. Well, I need this report from you. Well, I need this email right away. Well, I need this right away. And my favorite question, which I think is why I am self-employed, is based on what? What? You need that? Based on what? Well, I just need it. Well, but is it based on an impact that we have on a client? Is it based on getting a project out the door? What's that based on? Well, I just want it. Well, then it'll have to wait because I'm focused on this and this and this that has impact on these people here, here, and here.
Hmm.
So drawing that healthy boundary, right? When people are just all reactive, back to the what's the sides, when people are just, I got it for you. I'll get it for you. Oh, yeah, I got it. I'll get it. I'll get it. You're going down that road.
And how much does really that fast. Stifle creativity and innovation and just
huge
individually thinking when we're tasking? And I think sometimes we think, oh, well, we got AI coming and it can make us more efficient. And as soon as AI takes off one thing on our plate, something else is thrown right back on.
Bingo.
It's not ever going to go away.
No.
And we are in control of that. So with that being said, what's an example of somebody where rest you've seen directly improving somebody's decision making and that creativity?
Well, I was a volunteer firefighter in between college and did more just like servicing hydrants and stuff. But I also got to ride along and go on fire inspections. Actually, at one point, I thought I was going to be a fire inspector because I was fascinated by how fire works and how you can tell what burned and what started it and all this cool stuff, right? So I was like, yeah, I want to do that.
That's called a pyro.
You ought to see my fire pit out back. Huge, huge. So, I definitely, you know, there's not one firefighter, you say that, but there's not one that I know that's not a pyro in their heart because they really are. They love to set stuff on fire and because they know how to put it out. So they feel good about it. And they're like, I got this. I'm going to set this stuff. Watch this burn, boys. So when I did that, something I noticed that was interesting. There was one guy, very ambitious, super nice, younger guy, just started with the fire department. And he would say, hey, I'll pick up that shift. Hey, I'll pick up that shift. And I remember the sergeant one time going, no, you're not. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, no, you're not. He goes, because you picked up an extra shift last week and you made this mistake, and this mistake. None of them were life-threatening, but you got hurt in the process. Someone else might get hurt next time. You can't do that. So that kind of stuck with me. And so fast forward, here I am in my sign shop, got a new venture, Dimensional Images, with another guy, and it's a wholesale business. It's my first ISA, right? We're displaying for the first time. I am scrambling because we do really cool multi-dimensional stuff. Rainforest Cafe was one of the companies that I did stuff for, all the interiors and things. So it's like, okay, we do some really cool stuff. We got to show it off. Paint wasn't drying well. We were having issues. Right? Never happens in a sign shop. No. What, the paint department being the bottleneck? That never happens, right? No, never. So it wasn't drying right. I'm like, what is going on? And we try, and I'm up till midnight. We've got to be in our car or in the trucks with the trailers, hauling that stuff down there to set up by the next day at no later than 8 a.m. So I've got crew members staying behind, helping load what we can, but we're still having problems with some drying. I remember that lesson and I went, I'm making mistakes because I can't think right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is critical.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a 45-minute nap.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally had people out there trying to figure it out. That I told them to go home and they wouldn't. And I took a 45-minute nap, woke up, grabbed a cup of coffee, walked out, and had the solution like that. We fixed it and was out the door at 6:35.
There you go.
I remember the time because I was like, holy crap, we're actually early.
Right.
Right? And when we got there, there was no issues. The paint was good. It cured enough. We were gold. So again, we tend to push to solve a problem when we need a clear mind to do it. You know, there's something to be said about daydreaming. Okay, I've got an 11-year-old that's very active. The minute the boy's up, he's 100 miles an hour. We have to homeschool him. Let me just put it that way. We have to. Okay, we just do. But he's brilliant. This is a kid that read a year ago, a book on chess and has beat everybody in the family and no one can beat him.
Wow.
So he's that kid. Numbers, that's his strength. He's either going to be an engineer or, you know, a thief. We don't know. Because he'll never get caught. He'll figure out how to do it somehow. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, he's amazing too, but in his own different way. we try to limit his screen time and stuff because of it.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's so high energy and he's so 100 miles an hour and just go, 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 right? He's just wired so differently from everyone else, right? So how do you, back to the homeschool thing and everything, kind of circling back a little bit, okay? How do you guide that in such a way that it doesn't become burnout? That becomes the thing, because they want to think all the time. I think we're on to technology already. At that point, it's the amount of screen time. We're consuming all the time. So this 11-year-old that's always go, 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 back to what we were talking about, we don't pause at all, right? Boredom. He'll say, I'm bored. I bet you hear that a lot from your kids, right? I'm bored. You know what my response is now?
Good. Yep.
Because that means your brain has an opportunity to rest and come up with original ideas and not just regurgitate everybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
My dad would always say, if you're bored, that means you're boring.
I like that.
Just to kind of overview all of this, and it's interesting that you bring up your experience as a firefighter or, you know, in that field, because as first responders, my husband is a first responder. There's actually 3 sisters in our family, 2 of us married police officers, 1's married to a firefighter. Wow,
thank you. That's awesome.
But in their world, their burnout is so real because of fight or flight. They are constantly on fight or flight all the time. And so it's something that's talked about a lot. It's something, you know, with PTSD and things along those lines, it's talked about a lot, but they're also dealing with life and death situations. Like your boss said at that time, this wasn't a life or death situation, but I'm seeing those mistakes. And I think too often in the business world, we don't look at it like that because we're not dealing in life or death. But that doesn't mean that our brain is not overloaded, that we are not so packed down with stuff and information. We are short-circuiting. Basically, I mean, there's no other way to put it, is that we are. And it, as important as it is for those people to get, for those first responders to get that time off and that rest, it's the same amount of importance for anybody else. And technology and the amount of information that is flooded in our brains 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Again, our brains weren't meant, I mean, we are an amazing, amazing species. We are, the human mind is such an amazing thing. But when you don't rest that, what it truly, truly does is empty your tank. So,
but it that is such a great point. But I'm going to push back just a little bit. Okay, it is life or death of our souls.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Of our soul, because what we end up doing is we fill our lives with so much, we have no space for the things that fill the soul. And the soul fills everything else. When your soul is filled and you feel like you're in alignment with the universe, and you take that time, for me, with my belief system, it's that prayer time in the morning and a little bit in the Bible, just things that you watch in that video that's a documentary that goes deep or whatever. You just kind of go, okay, these are the high level things that matter, right? So you can kill a soul, which kills productivity, which kills the individual, so to speak. And now you've got bad attitudes. You got water talk that's negative, and you got cancer inside your organization, right? And that's really a bad thing. I mean, I looked up some statistics as I was curious. Screen time by age. You guys ready?
Mm.
All right. This is interesting. Age 16 to 24, 9.1 hours a day.
Wow.
Wow. A day. 4.2 of that's on social media.
Ooh,
I would believe that, sadly.
Okay, age is 25 to 44. So the prime time where your brain's being formed into adulthood, you're being totally influenced by the screens, right?
Yep.
Age 25 to 44, 7.8 hours.
Right? I believe it.
2.3 in social media alone. Right. So they're not even counting us watching YouTube videos and all that other stuff, right? They're not even counting that. They count the 7.8, but not social media. Ages 45 plus, that'd be me. You're 5.6 hours a day, 1.2 in social media alone.
Wow. Because I get caught in the doom scrolling, right? Sometimes too. We all do it. We all do it.
Never in the bathroom. Never.
Oh, no. I don't even know what you're in the bath. What are you talking about? But I think,
no, I've been here 4 hours. It's okay. I'm having problems.
Right. No. And you just, like, even just laying there at night scrolling, and you're like, I should be falling asleep. Like, I've caught myself before falling asleep while scrolling on social media. And then I have to be like, Tori, what are you doing right now? Put your phone down, go to sleep. And I learned about the value of sleep in college, which proudly I had never pulled an all nighter in college. I always got at least some sleep, which wow. I feel like is very impressive. So yes, I'll take a bow for yep. that. But I learned about the power of sleep when I had a major injury my junior year, and I studied dance, and so it took me out of dance, and I still, you know, participated in classes and rehearsals as I was able to. But I simply had to sleep, because if I didn't, my body wouldn't have healed as quickly as it did. You know, praise God, I didn't have to have surgery or anything, but it was right. it was a broken fibula. But yeah, it was not fun. But I think that my body knew that it needed to sleep, and so I did, and I got probably at least 9 hours on average for those couple months, because I had to have it. My body was desperate for rest so that it could heal. And I think that, right, that what we sometimes forget, that the rules that apply to physical injury also apply to mental and emotional injury, right? And so when you're dealing with severe stress, right, that we could equate to a broken bone, we're not giving ourselves that same kind of care that we would if we had some sort of physical injury, right? So I always say sleep is the best, like, sleep is the best thing. Start there. If you're not getting enough sleep, then you're not going to be able to do anything else.
Yeah. And everyone has different levels, right? Totally. So you just got to know your body.
Yep.
I don't need as much as my wife. I just don't.
Yep.
I've noticed if I ever go over 7, I feel more groggy.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I actually feel worse if I go over 7 hours.
Yeah. Huh. There you go.
So I never go over 7 hours. And I feel like I've got 2 kids and a company. I never go over 7
hours. That's fair. I feel like I could get 10 hours, honestly, and that would be fabulous. I probably get that's between 7 and 8 on average, but I wish I could get more than that. I think women in general need a little more sleep.
Than my husband. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, for sure.
Probably.
Yeah. For sure. Ree, this was such a great episode. Like, where do we even start? And also, like, so excited for part two of this topic. But what is your key takeaway? There's so much. How do you pick one?
I don't. This was a deep dive. I mean, it really was. And it was really thought-provoking on a lot of this. And I think something that Scott said that really stood out to me was when we talked about how this idea of the grind and busyness, and we have to constantly be doing more, where it started was the education system. And that's never something that I thought about. And it really is truly, you know, it's got me thinking. And to think that, I mean, from such a young age, these kids are so structured and they have so many deadlines and, you know, what they need done. And I even talked a little bit about, you know, the extra homework for kindergartners and first grade. And it's just the constant, the bells ringing and what we're doing next. So I found that very insightful, and just definitely going to be pondering that more in days to come.
Absolutely. I think it's always, because I would agree, that's one of probably my top takeaway as well from this episode, is just going back to our roots, which I think you'll see a little bit more in part two of this topic as well. You got to go back to where it all started, right? And for my life, and for Ree, for your life, and for every life of our, for the lives of all our listeners, it goes back to how were you raised, right? What did your home look like? And what did your education look like? I've been in conversations this week with a good friend who, her daughter is 2 years old, kind of getting ready for that, like, preschool stuff. And, you know, she's been struggling with some questions of, like, how do I raise my kid in a way that's, like, helpful for her neurologically, but also doesn't stifle her desire to play and to move, and, you know, that allows her personality and creativity to continue to develop. So it's been interesting to talk with her about that. And I think it really, like Scott said, it, it really does go back to how we educate our children and how we allow their brains to develop. So yeah, kick the screens out. Let kids like play in the dirt, you know, let them run around outside. Yeah. Yeah. You guys were sharing
why you have a huge shift to almost homeschooling.
Totally.
Because we are starting to see this. We're starting to recognize this and stifling just who they are innately as a person and molding them into exactly what we want them to be, instead of instilling the creativity and that mind of growth for them. So it's very interesting, and I'm excited to talk more about it. Thank you so much, Scott, for sharing all your wonderful insights. Remember, you know, as we continue talking about this, rest isn't weakness. It is fuel, and it looks different for everyone, and it's very important. I can't wait to continue discussing this in our next episode, and I just look forward to it.
Absolutely. Want to encourage listeners to think about what's an area of your life where you can experiment a little bit with rest this week. Let us know in the comments. Of course, don't forget to like and share this episode. Give us a follow. And until next time, keep innovating.